could set areas aside, even though.
The House Resources meeting to order. For the record, members in attendance are Representatives Springer, Cotton, Herman, Navarre, Sund, and Pierce. Today we'll be talking about House Bill 4, Plan 2, Alaska Bottom Fishing Plan. I introduced a bill to draw attention to the industry issue that does not have much attention paid to it by the state. The bottom industry, I know that it's definitely on the minds of Alaskans because they are impacted by the industry and they have no choice but to deal with the impacts. There was some money put into the budget last year to help some with their water problems, but it looks like much more will be needed to encourage private industry to develop on shore. From my understanding, Unalaska is turning away much business for onshore development just because they are unable to adequately provide the basic service of water and sewer. We need to diversify ourselves and not be so dependent on oil, and I think that the bottom fishing industry is one way we can diversify. But we need that product and operations onshore so that Alaska can benefit. Also, I believe that we need a fisheries person in the governor's office, as well as a bottom fisheries person that doesn't do studies but takes action on how our state can benefit. And I'll let Alaska talk about that, and also coordination with Anchorage now that everything's going to Seattle, and Seattle's benefiting a lot more, Anchorage can, and I know that there's efforts being done to do that. With that, I'll just let River Winds to take the lead in Alaska.
Thank you. My name is Gary Daly. I'm the port director for the city of Unalaska Dutch Harbor. I've been in Alaska for 20 years. I've been in the maritime, marine transportation, marketing, shipping for approximately 15 years in this state. My purpose of the talk here is to introduce you to a concept that heretofore we find that most of us in Alaska have precious little knowledge. I was in Homer for 12 years as the director there, and twice the president of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters Port Directors, went on the board of the Pacific Coast Congress of Port Directors from Mexico North. I pretty well knew my stuff. I didn't know where in Alaska was. I had an opportunity following retirement to go back to work in Dutch Harbor. Well, I went out to Dutch Harbor, found out that that's really where in Alaska was, and that's where all the activity was. Now, I'm a 20-year Alaskan resident. Reasonably into the fisheries business. And I think the thing that kind of concerns you is that, gosh, if those of us in the marine business really don't know where the area is, perhaps those decision makers in the state are suffering from the same problem. We recognize that this group cannot just turn the light on and effect a major change in what this program is all about, but really what we look at it as is the shore basing of the new American factory trawler. The factory trawler is a vessel that's about the size and bigger than the Alaska Marine Ferries. There's 41 of them that are presently operating out of the area now. There will be exactly double that number within 4 years period, possibly less. Of the 41 factory trawlers that we're working now, there's approximately 9,800 jobs related with those 41. It's guesstimated that the support base that would require 70 factory trawlers to operate, these are all American owned, it will be approximately 22,400 shore-based jobs. There's no way that this small community we're from can accommodate that. We have less than 2,000 permanent residents there. But the point is that the industry in general, what it means to Alaska is really worth something. A factory trawler, I envision it because we operate 14 of them off our little city dock, American factory trawlers, and they should be colored gold. And the reason they're gold is that every time they haul off a great big load of bottom fish, pollock, herring, whatever, it's worth an awful lot of money. But who it's really worth a lot of money to is Seattle. Seattle has here in the past several weeks allocated a $200 million investment in the Seattle port facilities to ensure that the American factory trawler is going to stay based in Seattle. Now, when you're talking $200 million, that's a fair amount of upgrading for a facility that is upgraded on a continuing basis, and that's just one port. That does not include the port of Coos Bay, does not include Newport, any of the other ports up and down on the Pacific Northwest. The jobs that is beginning to happen here is new to Alaska. In the past 20 years, Japan has absolutely maintained the number one position in the development of this industry. 20 years, over 500,000 jobs in Japan are in support of the Bering Sea fisheries alone. And we're saying if Japan can do it, why can't we do it? We tend to put a royalty tax on oil, on timber, minerals, except for fish, which we like to give away. We don't like to, it just happens to be that way. 8 years ago, the bottom fish industry did not exist. We didn't have it. Oh, there are a couple of draggers. If you ask how many bottom fish boats and people that live in Dutch Harbor in Alaska, we have no fleet. The fleet is from somewhere else. We have a visitor fleet. Of the 4,000 port calls that I get at the port of Dutch Harbor, I think two of them, if I'm not mistaken, the Morning Star and another vessel, are local boats. The rest of them are from somewhere else, almost all of them from Seattle. The chart where the action is, all of us know in this room that the Pribilof Islands are in fact south of Juneau. Latitude 47, or in this case objective 57, will put the Pribilofs, if you walk your big chart over, at Sitka. Dutch Harbor is really south of Alaska. It's in Prince Rupert. And when that tremendous flow of warm water comes up, and the tremendous flow of cold air comes up, that's where the winds are born. Now last week we had sustained winds of over 106 miles per hour for 2 days. One of the reasons these guys run for cover, and there's precious few harbors on the Aleutians that you can hide from winds. Now that was 106 miles per hour in Dutch Harbor. I don't know what it was out where the action goes. But it's something that is worth looking at. The green lines were put together for me by the Alaska Marine pilots. Captain Harry Jacobson, who has spent 41 years sailing these waters since 1947. Captain John Scheibels, who's a 20-year pilot, a Marine pilot. These are their lines. This is the Great Circle Route coming out of the Pacific Northwest, going into the Orient. It goes through Unimak Pass. This is the area from Chignik, Sandpoint, King Cole. Every foreign ship that comes into port must clear customs and immigration, and it does that in Dutch Harbor. That ship is dispatched by the various shipping agents, whether it be Alaska Maritime, North Star, Victory Services. They are dispatched for salmon, for herring, for capelin, for whatever. That little ship will run its course and pick up every possible thing it can. And then as it leaves the area, again, it has to come back into Dutch Harbor. It clears customs, and away it goes to Japan, Korea, China. We talk international trade. We deal with 14 nations that we can document right now. In an 8-month period, we had 441 foreign ships in Dutch Harbor. Foreign investment, foreign trade, the types of things that the administration is telling us to get behind, we do that every day, every single day. Some of you were at our presentation yesterday, and you've heard this, but I was reading my Marine Digest log here last Wednesday, and I see where the Port of Everett finally has got the heaviest, most lucrative, busiest time in their port's career. They had 14 ships at their dock in February. My harbor master loaned me this from his daily log, and this is the log on just one little 420-foot city dock. There's 49 ships at our dock. To give you a little idea, and we have one of 15 facilities in Dutch Harbor on Alaska. The ones in black indicate that the vessel is a medevac. He's brought in an injured or a crewman that was killed at sea. We have the Tuscamina that comes in during the summer months, once a month. We have NOAA ships, Miller Freeman. We have Soviet vessels. We have Portuguese vessels. We have on and on and on. The activity includes Japanese. It includes in order of Korean, the Soviet Union, the People's Republic of China, and others. What we would propose to you is an attitude, awareness. A thing that I keep going back to, and I probably should drop it from the presentation, but I was in a meeting several weeks ago, with the new Anchorage Port Director, Larry Dineen, and Mayor Tom Fink, in a way that we can tie Anchorage in with this incredibly vast resource. There's a way to do it. Come to find out, Anchorage is already in the business, didn't even know it, in support of a variety of things. What we looked at was a way to bring in increased transportation, parts, services, all of the things that, for instance, employment. We found out that the RDA Alaska, which is owners of 19 factory trawlers, are doing all of their hiring now out of Anchorage. We didn't know that. Nobody knew that. So we're doing a little investigation to find out just how important is Alaska now to this new bottom fishing industry. In attendance at this meeting was the president of an exceptionally large Alaska-based fish processing facility. And Tom Fink asked this individual, what do we have to do specifically to get your business in Anchorage? And his comment was, well, Mr. Mayor, I don't understand what your problem is. Every time I stop in Anchorage, I use the restroom. Well, that's kind of been the attitude that Seattle has had toward Alaska. We just stop in and compare you with the urinal or whatever and do our number. Well, when you look at a total of 5%, possibly 7% on the outside, is what we are getting from what I consider our fish. I don't know that we're particularly wise in that. Now, there's a key to unlocking the Seattle monopoly. The word to date has been, we'll build the fleet. The fleet didn't exist 8 years ago. The factory trawler did not exist 3 years ago. We'll build this fleet, and the infrastructure will follow. Now, a factory trawler costs from $17 million to $30 million. One company alone has 19 of them. They are coming online at the rate of 2 to 3 a month, directly into on Alaska for the most part, because that's where the action is. This is where they're going. Now, yeah, you'll get a factory trawler or two in other areas, but remember that does represent jobs. What we would propose in our particular area is, number one, stay away from the disincentives. The folks that have been running this fishing operation for 20 years have been doing it without the use of Alaska. They don't need us. They do all their transshipping at sea in spite of the 100-mile-an-hour winds. What's happened here in just the last few months, we're finding out that they're coming into Dutch Harbor, those great big mother trampers, mother ships, laying at the city dock. They're transshipping hundreds of thousands of pounds of product now for the very first time at a dock, henceforth has never been taxed, there's never been a reason to, and we begin to encourage them in there. Now there's a 10,000 foot stretch of property in Dutch Harbor proper. That property, we can earmark nearly $60 million in private sector investment that would like to be built there, and give you the names, who they are, where their locations are, in that area, if there was a sewer line. We have already attracted Icicle Seafoods. That company has the Arctic Star, which is a big floating processing facility, and they've got it tied up to a dock, and they're trying to do business on the shore. Now, Arctic Star is also the sewer fisheries people. They have a $20 million plant they're trying to build on Alaska property, as are other groups, but they can't do it because there's no sewer. Now, in association with a plant like that, you have to have a bunkhouse that will accommodate 200 to 300 people. You can't do that if you don't have a place to flush the toilet. The water that we are generating sometimes requires 1 million gallons a minute to operate a processing facility. Sarimi is even more than that. Our water line is an old 12-inch wood stave water line that was outlawed in Arkansas 40 years ago, that over the quakes and the 40-some years of shaken loose, we have an 80% lossage in that area. It's been necked down to 4 inches in some place. We have a 2,000-foot dock area that the private sector investor put in, Delta Western, Western Pioneer. They put that system in only to find out that when they activate the sprinkler systems, it doesn't work. There's not enough pressure to operate that. Well, you know what that does to the guy's insurance. What we're looking at is an extension of the city dock with the most rudimentary, basic kind of an extension that man can build. It's an 800-foot extension that would allow us to put the ferry Tustamina on it, allow us to put our government, our Coast Guard. The 14 factory trawlers that I have now bring in approximately 2 million pounds of product. Every time they come in, they do it every 21 days. We cannot possibly handle the ships now. There is no port that I know of in the Pacific Northwest, or let's say the Pacific Rim, that has the activity that this one little dock has, and we all are owned by Alaska. Seattle knows it, would like to help. Japan would love to own us. Seattle and Alaska, there's quite a difference of opinion as to how important the fisheries is. We're here to state that the investment into an 800-foot extension of the dock is going to allow us to accommodate 50 to 75 ships a month on a 24-hour basis. The more monies that we can develop into shore-based facility is the more indirect monies that's going into Alaska. Representative Sunday was talking last night to Ernst & Winnie, and one of the questions was, for every 5% that that Alaska can gain in shore-based operations or in part of this multi-billion-dollar industry, that's going to equate into a $100 million figure, and that money goes directly into Alaska shore-based facilities. It's not a tax revenue. Let me give you an idea. Bristol Bay, the five species of salmon and the herring, $156 million in value. Now that's ex-vessel value, price paid to the boat. If you're talking all the transportation routes in this entire area, they've been doing it for hundreds of years. All the way over into the Bering Sea Aleutians, and from our fishing game department, we find out the shellfish and crab and scallops alone, just in this area, is $158 million. Very similar to the Bristol Bay is. If you take the bottom fish industry, which nobody really knows what they look like, but we're talking 1.2 million metric tons, which means over $2 billion. We had a concern here a year ago. I addressed in Juneau Pacific Coast Congress of Port Directors and Harbor Masters on the fisheries impact and what it means to the Pacific Northwest. I went down to ASME just to get a picture of a pollock or a cod, just to show my counterparts what this animal looks like. And boy, they had some beautiful pictures of salmon and red snapper and dungeness and all these other, but nobody had any pictures of a pollock or a cod. Now, they're not a very pretty fish, but it seems to, with a $2 billion value, some of us ought to know what this thing looked like. I'm just as guilty as anybody, because I should have had a picture myself. I'm in the business. But when we added all of this thing together and we brought it all into Unalaska Dutch Harbor, we're requesting that in addition to a minor dock extension, you benefit, I get paid by the month. There is a extension of a water line and the development of a sewer line. When you think of the port of Dutch Harbor, it's known the world over, as NOAA refers to it, is the busiest, most highly impacted fishing port on the planet Earth. We don't even have a sewer line down there. Now, how can we develop onshore processing and home porting this new American factory trawler fleet if we can't legally put in a septic tank, because on the side of the Aleutians it's mountain and sea? We can't do that. We're maxed out on our bonding. We're a first-class city. We don't own the property. It's owned by the local village corporation. They're good people to deal with. In fact, Dennis Robinson is the chairman of our board. Our bonding is maxed out. Our city manager will tell you more about that. We recognize you can't flick the switch and make the thing happen. I think perhaps just a little bit more awareness of the marine transportation patterns. Another thing, they don't need us. We're trying to encourage them to come to the beach. They're saying, okay, how much do you want for the piece of land? The Arctic Enterprise fleet with 19 factory trawlers, the investment of that company to date has exceeded $350 million. They said, we'll build our warehouses and our coal storage. We just want a place to put it. Cold storage in Japan costs 8 times what it costs in America. 8 times. if you can find it. That's why Anchorage all of a sudden has become a primo opportunity for this new emerging development fisheries. We think that in that it's coming into Dutch Harbor on Alaska, and the spin-offs are throughout the entire Aleutian communities in Kodiak, that it's worth your time to consider that. And we would sure support, or ask for your support here in any future decision makings of our community. Thank you very much. Perhaps our city manager.
Yeah. Are there any questions of Gary or comments? I have one question on the customs person. Does that person still come out of Anchorage, or is there one?
Yes, he comes out of Anchorage, or she. We do not have a customs officer, and it's unique at best.
How many times are they coming out there?
They built it. This. They'll come out there dozens of times a year. It's very expensive for them to do that because they are accommodated in the hotel. The shipping agents pay for their stay. To date, we have not been very effective in that area, too. It's the developing of a new concept. We think that in time we'll be able to do that. Right now, we're dead in the water with customs.
One thing, a bright spot on the horizon for customs is we got a letter not too long ago from somebody back in D.C. And they are willing to contract with someone on a part-time basis. We're trying now to set it up with our public safety department, since they're up at all hours of the day and night, to have them trained to be customs agents. But customs is not willing for a full-time person out there. I wanted to give you a little bit of information about Alaska today, and I gave you on one of the handouts the population. The point that I want to make is that from 1973 to 1977, the population went from 510 to 1971, and it's staying right around 1,600 to 1,900 people. The Department of Community and Regional Affairs this year, though, has decided that our population is 1,331. This results in our losing any further volume capability. We have already sold a number of bonds for a number of things, and with the reduction in population, as you know, the bond houses look at your per capita debt, and our per capita debt now is up somewhere around $10 if we've only got 1,300 people. We did a survey this summer showing 1,630 residents with approximately 250 more in bunk houses and company facilities that we didn't even count. I have an appointment with Commissioner Hoffman later in the week, but I don't hold out too much hope for their changing their mind. There is a perception around the state that Alaska is rich, just as there is a perception around the state that the state is rich. And at the end of 1984, the first year that I was out there, the city general fund ended up $150,000 in the hole. In FY88, there was a general fund surplus of $650,000, of which $600,000 was committed to the waterline project that you folks funded for us last year. We have a 12.7 mill rate, which generates about $1 million. We have our own jail, which we built with a lease purchase arrangement in order to protect our bonding ability. We pay an annual lease on that of about $100,000. It's our own jail, so we pay the cost of all the Title 47 incarcerations. We pay the what the state requires us to pay for schools and more. The state maintains no roads out there. Our state assistance through municipal assistance and revenue sharing amounts to about 15% of our general fund budget. I'd like to speak just briefly about this, the water and sewer project, and I have a couple of handouts. The water is here, the sewer's on the bottom. This graphic on the wall shows the water project goes from the highway at Universal Seafoods, across here, down past Aleutian Processors, Asian Alaska Processors, East Point Seafoods, San Sushi Seafoods, American President Lines, Delta Western Fuel Dock, City Powerhouse, State Airport, City Dock, Delta Western Property, Icicle Seafoods Lease. If you'll notice, the distances that have numbers on them are land that is undeveloped and belongs to the Unalashka Corporation, came to them under ANCSA, therefore it's not subject to taxation, is not subject to any sort of assessments or anything else until it's developed. And we don't get any taxes from it until it's developed. This is about 35% of the total water project. The sewer project goes as far as here, from here to here. We already have sewer out this far. And here we have the amount of unassessable property is about 60%. So we're really in a bind. And there was some discussion yesterday in the Economic Recovery Committee of trying somehow to structure an assessment district whereby these projects, when, or these pieces of property, when they are developed, would then be required to participate. It would probably be a bookkeeping nightmare, but you've got the question of who's going to front end the money, who's going to build the system so that it is later developable. And we simply do not have the money to front end it. So that's the project. I'd like to speak a little bit on the bill. We support the bill, of course. We are also concerned about the Fisheries Technology Center in Kodiak. That center and funding for that center is very important for the development of the bottom fish industry. They can do a lot of the research that needs to be done. They're not included in this bill. They may be included elsewhere in the budget, but it is an important project for bottom fish development. Something came to my attention the other day, the possibility of an electronic fish auction to be carried on by computer from Unalaska, Kodiak, Anchorage, other coastal communities, and then the product could be shipped. Once the transaction was completed, the fish could be shipped all over the world through Anchorage. It makes a lot of sense. I see what we've presented here as the bottom fish development plan actually as a phase one. The Bering Sea, if managed properly, can be a continuing Prudhoe Bay. We see it as being, if we each 5% that we can pick up of that fishery adds $100 million to the economy of the state. And that to me is significant. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Nancy? Any comments?
Just in the bill itself, section 4 or 5, I didn't see anything. It's a $230,000 grant to the municipality of Anchorage to implement a bottom fish development plan. I guess that means to implement something that exists. I'm not sure that anything exists.
Actually, I forgot to mention Anchorage. They are an integral part of the whole project, through the marketing end of it, through the support services, as I think Gary mentioned. Some of the companies are beginning to realize that they can get their boat parts, their electronic supplies quickly through Anchorage. It's one airplane, it can't get lost anywhere. When the boats are not operating, it costs the vessel owners a great deal of money. And so it's easier to ship out of Anchorage for those emergency supplies than it is to get it all the way from Seattle. There are times when a part is so important to a vessel that they will actually have a person in Seattle go to the parts place, pick up the part, get on the airplane, fly to Dutch Harbor with the part, give the part to the crew member, get back on the airplane and fly back to Seattle. And it's worth it to spend that kind of money because it costs the vessel so much when it's down for a day. So we would see Anchorage as increasing its role in the fisheries. And also, I'm hearing some things about Anchorage International Airport and the possibility of reduction of traffic through there. If we can begin to maybe ship some of this fish product by air through Anchorage, that might increase the
I don't have any problem with, you know, trying to get Anchorage to believe that there is a fishing industry in the state of Alaska. That's not really a problem with me. I was just wondering if they had any concept of what they were going to do with $230,000. It says here to implement the Alaska Bottom Fish Development Plan within the municipality. It might be better to say to create one.
Well, that could be.
I've never heard that the city of Anchorage has a Bottom Fish Development Plan.
Well, they're a part of this
one. I know they need help
from
the municipality.
There is a component within this one. And we did have Mayor Fake came out a couple of weeks ago, along with Larry Dineen, and visited with us, visited a number of the plants, and I think it was a very educational experience for both of them.
I was just asking for where that was. I just kind of wanted to see it, to see what they were going to do with it.
Yeah.
And the second part of that, the computerized fishery information system. Although everybody's enamored with computers, I heard a little bit about this. This is from ASK, I get ASK, I forget what that stands for. There's a gentleman in Anchorage who's a friend of Representative Grunberg's anyway that is advocating this theory that we put this together, and I was hoping to see a little bit more of some information of how this was going to work. I know that NOAA and other people have tried to collect fisheries data and publish it and hopefully make that information available and that it be useful in the sale of fish or the marketing of fish. Most of us in the business have discovered that it's nice historic data, but it isn't very current and it isn't very useful in terms of day-to-day transactions.
That's right.
So I just wanted to kind of see, at least three pages of how this thing theoretically was supposed to work in the end before we spent $250,000 on trying to do it.
What they're trying to do, as I understand it, is to set up a central clearinghouse for current information within the port of Anchorage. I know the university in Anchorage has tried to set something up of this nature, and they don't seem to be able to either devote the manpower or whatever the hang-up is, but they are not able, just as NOAA is not able to produce current information, and that there would be a network set up where the information would be funneled in from each of these ports to that Anchorage clearinghouse on a daily basis.
I was just concerned, Madam Chairman, that we kind of lay this out and say, where is the data going to come from? I'm not sure my fish company would voluntarily contribute the data of what we're paying for fish or what we're selling fish for to some kind of data exchange. And if the industry isn't going to sit here and say, this is something that we're going to use or is going to be useful, if it's just going to be another governmental system for gathering data and publishing facts, that's one sense. But if the industry isn't going to use it, it's not going to work. You know, and I don't see Trident and Unicy and Icicle and all the other big boys sitting down here saying, yeah, we need this computerized fishery information system so that we can better, better buy fish or help us sell fish. I don't see the industry coming in saying this would really help us.
No, I agree with you. And a lot of that kind of information is proprietary.
It's all proprietary.
Yeah, and you'd be, just really hard put to anonymize the information sufficiently to protect each of those processes.
Yeah, and so I guess I'm asking, this day and age, a few years ago, a quarter of a million wasn't very much, but today a quarter of $1 million is a lot. And I'm just I'm not saying it's a bad idea, I'm not saying it's a good idea, I just don't see anything in our files here that says anything about it other than your verbal presentation. And I heard a little bit about it, this guy was trying to convince me of it a few weeks ago at a teleconference. But fish tickets, everything that's bought here is on a state fish ticket, I assume. That fish ticket is confidential information. The department does not have the manpower to put those fish tickets into its own computer system. We're now inputting 1985 data at this point in time. So that's not very useful data. And I don't see why I haven't seen anything here to encourage me that the industry would utilize it. Be a nice thing. Information is nice. I'm not sure it's useful. So that's just kind of where I'm asking for the backup or something on these issues.
We need to work with the Port of Anchorage or City of Anchorage to get that information. And that's the kind of thing you're talking about, like the electronic fish auction. And then the other thing on the FITC, I realized that I realize the importance of the Fisheries Industrial Technology Center in Kodiak, although Kodiak's not in my district, and I checked with a few legislators from there, and I didn't want to include it at the time because I felt like there was some concern about that. So we will be looking at that issue there, and not saying it won't be in here. And the other thing is that, we didn't check the Anchorage at all, but I'm sure they wouldn't mind getting money.
Yeah. No, Anchorage was extremely supportive. Paul and I met with Mayor Fink and his staff in Anchorage before we came down with the plan last month. And then Mayor Fink was in Alaska, so he is certainly aware and is supportive. And we have also contacted Anchorage legislators, several Anchorage legislators at least, and they are they understand the project and are supportive. The reason I wanted to mention Kodiak is because this said to implement the Alaska Bottom Fish Development Plan, and I didn't want folks to get the idea that this was all it was.
It seems to me that the majority of your development for water and sewer is to the right of the airport, and I was wondering, is the land between the airport and the city dock and Delta Westerns, is that private land?
Yes,
corporation
that's Unalashka Corporation land.
Is that unsuitable for development?
No, it is very suitable for development.
So why are we? It seems that we're going to a considerable expense to to provide water and sewer to the Delta Western portion. I was also wondering, you have your river frontage footage here. What is going to be required in the, like in a 5-year plan for to meet the needs of the community for dock space? With all of these 1 through 6, is that going to be 100% or 80% of your expected needs, or 200%?
So I can get
an idea of the importance of this expansion out to lot 6.
I would see probably in the next 5 years that 75% of this area would be developed.
But is it needed, is lot 6 needed today, or can that be, the line be shortened so that you can use the land between lot, the airport and lot 5, the city dock? Because that section seems to be for sewer and for water.
Uh-huh.
There could be considerable expense saved there.
The problem is that lot 6 is a very, very active fishery support location at the present time. And this is the outfit that has 2 buildings that they cannot sprinkler right now because we cannot provide water pressure sufficient to sprinkler the buildings. F is the location of where Icicle Seafoods has their lease. And so it's a real, it's a bear. If we could do it in stages, that would certainly be preferable.
Doesn't seem, you know, I guess I have concerns that the whole project may fail because of the budget, you know, the budget constraints that we have, and if we don't have a phased plan that we can consider, and then the prospects for this project, given the current fiscal condition of the state, is slim to none.
Madam Chairman, in section 6 you put a person or a position to coordinate the implementation. You put that in the office of the governor. Why is it there not in college?
Because, first of all, I put that in there. I think that, you know, when people come to Juneau to talk about fisheries, in the governor's office, there's one person up there that's responsible for all the resource agencies and probably more, DEC, DNR, Fish and Game. And that one person, I think, is just too busy to adequately address fisheries. And I think the state administration, if anything is going to be actively pursued and implemented, that it has to come from directly from the governor's office. They have to say, yes, we want a bottom fish plan. They have to say, you know, Commerce, you do this, you do that, but it has to come, I think, from the governor's office.
You have to come out of the governor's office, not out of the department, but some of us have been advocating that position be filled in the governor's office for 18 months now, and it hasn't. I'm not sure that they need the money. I think the money's in the governor's budget. He just needs to fill a position, and the answer is they haven't been able to find the right person. And I can say, yeah, don't fill it with just a body. You need to have a person that's capable of doing the job, but I think the recruiting effort could probably step up a little bit, some of this. Not only for bottom fish, I would just say for the implement of fisheries plan for the state of Alaska. And, you know, you concentrate on bottom fish, but it doesn't exist there for anything else either.
We certainly support that. There have been just a number of very, very important fisheries issues that have come to our attention since the session began, or in the last year, I guess. And we've called various state agencies to see what the state's position is. to try to cooperate with the state, and we have to try to educate the state officials who are supposed to be looking after the good of all of us. And we've found considerable frustration in that area, and I would certainly agree with Representative Zinn.
So if we found considerable frustration, are there any further comments, questions? Or? Well, thank you very much for your presentation, Nancy. So, do you got, Zane or Dennis, do you have anything to, any comments you want to make?
I guess I'd just make a comment on President Hoffman's observation on the fiscal issue. I think we're probably $200 to $300 million in the hole right now to create a budget just at last year's level. We want about $2.1 billion is what we spent last year, and we'll know better in another couple of weeks, but my guess, the revenue estimate's going to be what, Sam, 1.8, 1.85?
If that,
maybe be even less than that. So we're about $300 million out of whack. And we really have two choices. We're either going to go into the permanent fund, or we're going to have to repeal the tax credit on the Gulf for the oil industry. And I don't see cutting $200 million out of the state budget as a viable option in the state of the economy of the state right now.
They're not going to vote for an income tax?
Well, an income tax really doesn't, I would support an income tax, I always have, but it doesn't generate any new dollars. It, out of the fisheries, it might pick up, what do we estimate, 40 or 50 million new dollars, but the rest of it's just a recirculation of what we already have. So we got some major...
Don't the income tax are enhancing.
Well, it's the only way to get the fishery industry involved. It's the only way to get any money out of the fishing industry into the state coffers, and they need to pay something. They're not paying anything now.
Exactly.
And all these guys that live in Oregon now pay income tax on all the income they earn in Alaska. The state of Oregon collects it.
Uh-huh.
And they say, if you pay in Alaska, you can credit it off. So the guy living in Oregon is going to pay it. One way or the other, it makes no difference to him. So it's stupid not to have it. But that aside, I think we're down to a battle of, I'm not sure the people of the state are really to pull $200 or $300 million out of the permanent fund earnings and cut the dividend program to put into the state budget yet. But if we don't change the oil tax structure, that's what the choice is going to be. Or otherwise, we can fool ourselves and just jack the revenue estimates up and deficit spend and solve it next year. That's a typical choice. So in answer to Representative Hoffman, I think, there is going to be money available for things like this. You know, if we are at the $2.1 billion mark, and I certainly support the infrastructure. I understand water, sewer, and docks, and I do understand computer systems a little bit, and I understand planning, but I just wanted to see the plan.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it is just to try to get Anchorage involved in the marketing and going on it, and maybe implement was not the right word. Maybe it should have been to plan to implement. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you. I want to recess till 9:30, and Representative Hoffman and Cotton can get together and talk about.
We can do it right here.
Maybe
we
can do a recess.
Andre, where did Springer go?
He has a meeting.
Why don't we just?
You might just go ahead and talk to him.
Okay, at this time we'll pick up House Bill 346, Resources. There's a committee substitute before us. Do you want to make changes in the committee substitute first? Or?
Well,
just
talking about
discussion.
Representative Hoffman's the chairman of the subcommittee, so he had at least one meeting, I think two, and
yeah.
Last meeting I attended, was we had recommended a restructuring of the sentence that now appears on page 1, lines 23 through 26, and this resembles what we decided on with the exception of the word necessary, and Shockey explained that she'd gotten together with my amendment and decided to put it back in. I still think it ought to be out, because I thought we ought to give the board a as much latitude as possible. And if you say, if you have the word necessary in there, they may decide that they would never open an area to people 60 or older, because it probably wouldn't, isn't ever really absolutely necessary in order to let those people fish. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about, you know, the example that Mr. Springer brought up in his area. I think about maybe in Ship Creek and Anchorage. They could say, okay, Tuesdays, 60 only. And if you had the word necessary in there, somebody might say, well, you don't really need to do that. Those people can get down there anyway. I just want to give them a little broader latitude.
So the CS will have necessary out of there.
Well, look, let me just ask a question on that if I can. What's the rationale for the discrimination on age? To allow it an area open just for people over the age of 60 or 65, if it isn't some finding of necessity, I mean, how does the board justify or not justify opening or not opening an area if there's no reason needed?
Look at the finding. See if that helps.
Well, the findings are one thing, but I mean, it's the authority is where the findings are just, they're going to end up in temporary law in the back of the book somewhere. They won't end up in Title 16.
That's why we left it out, and then that it went to legal, and legal recommended that it be included again. Yeah. You remember in the work session, we did not include necessary, but...
I don't really have a feeling one way or the other here. I'm just saying that I think you're putting the board in a pretty tenuous position. They have no basis here to make a decision to find a necessity in it. I think what you're talking about here is physical necessity, right? I mean, it's the area that may or may not be open is physically too far away, or they can't get to, or is it traditional type areas that are kind of traditionally been available to elderly people that now are no longer available. I don't have a good feeling of where we're headed or what the board's supposed to look at.
One of the things that Mr. Springer brought up was up on the, I guess on the Unifleet River, and they closed down Fort Cassie. I guess they closed down subsistence fishing. And they, I guess they couldn't have closed subsistence if they left the sport open. But there was some restriction on people's ability to fish anyway, so the bottom line. And everybody would have been happy if the old folks could have gone out and fished anyway. And that wouldn't have put such a heavy demand on the resource. So they could have let that much harvesting take place, that, you know, a few people that were over 60. But they weren't able to do that because they didn't. There's no statutory authority to discriminate on the basis of age. You probably remember that we also have a fishing license, and once you and I turn 60, we get a permanent fishing license. We don't have to buy one anymore. And it's just sort of that's the age that's been recognized.
That's why it's 60 and not 65. I thought it was 65.
What did the director say about necessary, and that why did he...
Talkies, you want to talk to
them? For the record, this is Deborah Greenberg. The drafter pointed out that the language in the original bill, or the sponsor substitute for House Bill 346, reads, if consistent with resource conservation goals and necessary to assist, which he said was giving the board direction about sort of how to set up general criteria for allowing elderly people. And what he explained was that the constitutionality of this is stronger if there's a sense that there's a reason you're setting aside areas and seasons for elderly people, and that if you take out necessary, then it sort of weakens it by making it seem like you're just trying to favor them for a class for no reason. That was his reasoning, and he actually proposed an alternative, something a little more convoluted, to put the necessary language back in the category with the consistent with resource conservation. And the necessary words in the committee substitute before you was sort of a second weaker alternative to get in closer approximation with what the committee was doing, but to strengthen it.
Do we have any consensus in the subcommittee then?
Well, let's just think about this for a little bit. Well, you know, I see what they're saying there, if I could. I didn't realize there might be a constitutional problem, and you don't want them to be capricious or arbitrary about their decision. But my concern was, if you said necessary, and someone could challenge it and say that the decision wasn't necessary because that person technically still had an ability without it.
But see, they would be presenting their case to the board, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but the challenge will come to the board's decision. And the board needs to have a rational basis to make this.
No, I mean if it's necessary or not.
The way you could do it would be on line 25, between the words to and participate, you could put some adverb in there that would modify that to where it wouldn't be absolutely necessary. You could say more conveniently participate or more easily participate.
Well, yeah, I think that the basic reason here is to gain access, and to gain access, they're unable now to gain access for what reason? That they're physically unable to get to where it's open, or
if you open it up, there's a million people show up, and so it's just not as easy to maneuver and elbow your way into the crowd. I don't know if you've ever been to the Russian River, but.
I tried to stay in the southeast, but...
Have you ever seen the scene down there?
I've seen the pictures, yeah.
So,
but I mean, would you even think about this would be shutting the Russian River down one day a week to everybody except over 60?
I wouldn't think that would be the place, but there's other places like that. But
because they have access. I mean, it's just that maybe it isn't as convenient, or isn't, you know, it's great to get down there, but it's open. But
they said a special site of the Russian River I've seen it.
But I think you got to be real careful here to just say by arbitrary age only, i.e. you're over the age of 60, that therefore you have the right to fish in this area and nobody else can fish there during these periods. I think you're going to have to find some other finding other than just age. And I think necessary. And I'm not sure the board's going to be, like you say, arbitrary and capricious. I think there's a message here to do it, but it also tells them that they need to have some findings, or they need to set up some guidelines and some rules for how they can implement this. That, you know, there were traditional areas that elderly fished in for, you know, eons or something that now aren't available because of...
Where else does this go? Does it go to
finance? Yeah. The other point I would make is on line 23 after the word conservation, I would propose add the words and development. And that comes out of the discussion we had in what fishery bill did we have up here the other day? Oh, on fines, subcommittee on the fishing fines. They used those words conservation and development, and I questioned why the word and development was in there, and it came back that that's in Article 8, Section 2, and I went and looked it up, and that's the way it's written in the Constitution. Actually, it's conservation, utilization, and development, but the court says utilization is in the word development. So, I don't know if it's consistent. We're putting that words conservation and development in every other bill that comes through here on the resource manager, fisheries. Might say to be consistent.
What was your first point, John?
Well, it's line 23 after the word conservation to add the words and development.
No, that's your second point.
My first point is just is the word, for the word necessary or some type of word like that, some qualifier in there to give the board some basis on which to hang some findings and some regulations.
And then Sam, you
said something about participate. You
wanted to put in some language there or something?
Well, Madam Chairman, I would just say that the way it's written down with the word necessary in there, I think would accomplish the goal of this bill, and that's to give the board the power or authority to set aside special areas in the state for elderly people to participate and support personal use or subsistence fishing. I think that does that. Now, the question that Representative Cotton's brought up is that too restrictive? Will the board interpret that in a way that they won't open up any areas, that they won't make a finding that anything is necessary? It's an argument, and maybe the question is to the board or Lisa or Larry Spengler or somebody who's going to advise the board on what this really means ought to get in there.
Well, I think we're just giving them authority, and the people that are presenting their case or their the area that they want to open, that'll go before the board, and they'll make their case like anybody else. But it'll give the board will be able to say, okay, yes, we can do this by law now. Should we or shouldn't we? What's in the Cotton view?
Well, let me try one more stab at this here. How about it's consistent with resource conservation and development goals. So the main sentence is that the board may adopt regs establishing seasons and areas for persons 60 years of age or older to ensure participation in sport, personal use, or subsistence fishing.
To ensure almost means to guarantee. I don't think the board should have to guarantee anybody participation.
To allow participation?
And that doesn't work right either, because then if you say participation, then you have to change the word fishing to something else, fisheries. I don't know, I'm starting to soften up on the word necessary here, I guess.
Okay.
My concern was that it would never happen because it would never be necessary. But I can't think of another word.
Can we amend the CS before adopting it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you have to make a motion on it, or does that go after?
I would just move to put the words and development after conservation.
Okay. Any objection to that? Hearing none. Is there any objection then with the language as written?
Do you have any other ideas, Clinton?
I entertain a motion to adopt the committee substitute.
So moved, Madam Chairman.
Okay, we have committee substitute for response substitute for House Bill 346 resources before us. Any discussion on the bill? I entertain a motion to move the bill out of committee.
So moved.
Any objections to moving the bill out of committee? Hearing none, so moved. Anything further to come before House Resource
What's
Committee?
What's the group on the
this letter of intent? Here.
Yeah. Oh, that's no longer necessary, I believe. It's in the bill.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
A couple of things on guides and outfitters. Are we going to have something ready?
No.
I'd like to have something. I thought we were talking about.
Oh, I thought we were just going to get together. Let's.
Can't we do a better job than the Senate?
Well, they're not finished yet. But we want to get, like, we're going to schedule something for next week.
The 25th and 28th, I believe we're looking at.
Is that next week?
Yeah.
Whatever.
So we have.
So we can get at least a briefing of the issues and what's happened so far, so we can start thinking about it, because it's going to be an issue that we should deal with this year.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one thing. I'm going to have a CS or a draft on Senate Bill 112 here available today or tomorrow that people are interested in seeing that. What else here we got? What about fishing violations? What's going on with that?
Oh, we had a subcommittee of me the other morning here.
I forgot about it. I would have been here. I was in town.
And,
you were chairman, too, huh?
No, Mike's the chairman.
I know, but you were that thing.
Just ground through it, listen to Lisa Kraken and talk about the board apparently discussed the issue and Gary Slavin, chairman of the board, was unable to make the teleconference, and they had some comments, and Lisa really kind of gave us a summary of them, but really didn't want to say what they're one of the chairmen of the fisheries board really said, here's what the board thought. But basically, they're generally agreement that the present existing fines are too low, and they have some discussion. And she kind of gave a rebuttal to Robinson's letter on his arguments. So I tend to agree with her that we can go ahead and make the fines, just let her sit down and figure out what's going to be fair.
Well,
so I can come back, I guess, with a CS.
My thought is that $6,000 is a fine. That gives a, you know, a 0 to 6 is the range, and it's pretty clear that they're going to, you know, bust some troll or caught one fish, $6,000.
I'm going to adjourn the meeting.
Okay. You want? I guess we can just.
I'd like to call the House Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is March 16th. Members in attendance are Representative Davidson, Schultz, Cotton, Herman, Navarre, and Pierce. Today we have two bills before us, House Bill 408 and House Bill 510. First we'll take House Bill 408, which is an act relating to the Fisheries Business Tax. The prime sponsor is Representative Davidson, and he would like to give some opening remarks on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have offered House Bill 408 because I think that the state is giving away more money than it's getting. And as we hear of new plans and new efforts to take from the state, there's seldom an opportunity to give to the state. And, of course, this cannot continue. So I've offered up House Bill 408, which taxes floating processors as they enter state waters utilizing infrastructure paid for by state taxpayers or local communities to carry on their business. The original, I have some substitute language also that I would like to offer the committee. The original bill is one that I worked out in cooperation with DOR. The fact of the matter is, Madam Chairman, is that our fisheries resource last year was harvested with a value of $1.8 billion. And the state treasury collected approximately $26 million on $0.8 billion of that value. This leaves approximately $1 billion from which the state treasury has received no tax monies or any share at all, and yet we know that when these floating processors come into shore, that they do impact the cost of services in these local communities. They utilize the fire, the water, the sewer, the library, the airports, etc. So the Alaska Statute 4375 is primarily for the processing activities of fishery resources in Alaska. My bill would address the processing activities of fisheries outside of water, outside of state waters, but that are transported into state waters for the purposes of transferring product to overseas trampers or to Washington business. Now, the simple fact of the matter is that as the law currently exists, there are fisheries products taken to Seattle that originate from Alaska waters, and the state does not tax it nor get a share of any of the process. But if it is landed in Washington State, Washington State does in fact tax them. I think perhaps there'll be other people who can address this, but I find that rather strange that we have Alaskan product, processed product that is taxable in Washington State but not taxable in our own state. I have decided that we need a broader base to construct this effort to get a more fair state share, and that is why in the substitute language that I'm going to offer is under a new chapter, and it addresses primarily a landing tax. present businesses would not be affected by this because they would be paying the tax as applied in 4375 or 4376. Madam Chairman, the shore-based processors have paid their way and contributed to Alaska since 1940 when 4375 was written. In those days, there were only shore-based processors, thus the law has become antiquated with the emergence of floating processors. By creating a new chapter, 77, the state would be entering into the 1990s with an updated tax plan. House Bill 408 would levy a landing tax and process fee, which is later landed in Alaska. The purpose of this bill is not to pick on floating processors, rather, because most of them have already paid a 5% tax on ex-vessel prices at catch. But some catch our resources, use our facilities, and contribute nothing. House Bill 408 would change that. It is estimated that this landing tax could bring $40 million to our state coffers, the $40 million that we should be collecting from our Commonwealth resources right now. This is money that is getting away and I think is rightfully should be collected by our state treasury. It is no secret that our enforcement effort in the state of Alaska, as well as our management effort, is minimal compared to the value of the catch. We've all seen the bar graphs that compare what effort the Alaska treasury makes to support the development and management of natural resources compared to California, Washington, and Oregon. It is estimated that, as I mentioned previously, that this would mean at least $40 million to the state treasury. It's my feeling that the state is getting shortchanged and that the actions of certain processors has been less than fair with our state. The case in point is last year 15% of the applicants for a fisheries business tax credit were Alaskans, were Alaskan based. The remaining 85% are from out of state. So we're doing a lot already to encourage out of state people to come in and invest in Alaska by giving them tax breaks. And now I think it is time for some of those out of state players in the processing industry to pay their fair share. Representatives from Unalaska who presented their bottom fish plan yesterday to you are correct when they say that the bottom fish is a perpetual Prudhoe Bay. It is important that we do not make any elk mistakes with our new fin gold or white gold bottom fish industry. We should not start out by offering them an unwarranted tax break. House Bill 408 will not chase anyone away. I think, in fact, we have the resources that they want. And it's time that we got Alaska's fair share and moved ahead. That's my comment for House Bill 408.
Thank you, Representative Dixon. For the record, my Representative Sund and Hoffman are in attendance. Are there any questions that the private wanted? Representative Sund.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, in terms of this tax coming in, is this a landing tax then?
Yes.
On processed cargo, so as the fish have been frozen and packaged on board and they're going to be transshipped in an Alaska port, this would be assessed on the transshipment then?
That is correct, Representative Sun. When a transshipment or ship-to-ship or ship-to-shore is made of processed product within state waters, whether anywhere within the three-mile limit, then that would be, by this legislation, a taxable commodity that 3%, that's the proposed committee substitute language. That would be taxable by 3% of the value of that processed product.
Okay. And we are already, you're saying, tax on the floaters for fish they process within the 3 miles, even though they don't land it?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Davidson, the amendment you're talking about is the Chapter 77 Fisheries Landing Tax, is that correct?
That's correct. Okay.
That would most likely be a CS then. Okay. Are there further questions or responses? Hearing none, would the Department of Revenue like to take part?
Okay.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Kettle. I'm Director of Income and Excise Audit for the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue has worked with the sponsor of this legislation in assisting and drafting language that we would think would reach out and tax the appropriate value of bottom fisheries that is currently being processed on the high seas and then brought through Alaska ports without doing detrimental harm to the shoreside industry or further driving away processing that's currently going on shore. The Department of Revenue recognizes that it has a difficult time ensuring compliance among the floating processors. Much of the bottom fish, as Representative Davidson has testified, is not being taxed by Alaska at this time. Last year, we collected $26 million in fisheries tax. $17 million of that was from shore-based, $9 million of it was from floaters. And that is, even though $2.5 billion of fish were processed on the high seas or out of the Bering Sea bottom fishery. A lot of that fish is now being transshipped through Dutch Harbor and other facilities in the state, and this bill presents an opportunity to return some of that value to the state for and in compensation for the services the state provides that fishery. I'm available to answer any questions you might have on the potential CS language.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I just reading through that's on this form here.
Correct.
That you're attempting, I was looking at the exclusion from fisheries landing tax where it states that processed fishery resource entering Alaska waters as cargo and merely passing through it is excluded. And you're differentiating that from fish that was landed on board a ship as round fish, processed into a finished product, and then brought on land and transshipped. I just wanted to find out what the distinction here is.
I think the distinction is that a lot of fish just passes through Alaska waters. It's processed on board, it's put into some sort of final form, at least for shipment, and is not offloaded. It just continues on to Seattle or over to Japan, but it may pass within 3 miles of Alaska. It may even stop in Dutch Harbor for while the vessel's being fueled or takes on necessary supplies or repairs, but it is not offloaded. I think we might have some constitutional problems reaching out and trying to touch that fish that are remaining in interstate commerce and really have no economic connection with Alaska.
Let's get an example. Those fish were caught 50 miles offshore, processed on board a ship, frozen, packaged into IQFs or boxed, and now the ship comes into Dutch Harbor, okay, and the fish are still on board the ship. Now, you're saying if they take the fish off of that ship and put it on the dock to load it into a container to go somewhere else, that's a taxable event?
That's right.
Okay, and if the ship fish never come off the ship just takes on fuel and steams out of port and leaves the country, that's not a taxable
that's
event.
Right.
I'm trying to relate that, I don't know if there's a way around it, but the testimony yesterday was an attempt by Dutch Harbor to build cold storages in Dutch Harbor to encourage people to offload their product, to hold them in Dutch Harbor for a long period of time, hopefully, until they're ready to go to market and then ship them off. Those would be taxable events, but given that, I don't know, that taxes play a major role in these decisions of whether you do that or not. We're saying if you don't get it, take it off your ship, just keep it on your ship and take your ship out of the state, then you won't pay any tax. So we we've actually increased the cost of doing what some people are trying to do here.
Well,
but it's near, I understand the interstate commerce argument, that I don't know that there's another way around it.
There are ways to offset some of those costs or to encourage the development of shore-based further processing facilities, whether it's cold storages or packaging plants or whatever. The landing tax could be modified in some way to offer credits for further processing on shore.
Well, I think we do that now. You get half of what you paid in back if you build something in.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I understand the thrust of the remarks of Representative Sun. But the fact of the matter is, this has been going on for 20 years. And I know down in Kodiak, I have a community, Old Harbor. We have floaters come in from outside, from Seattle, and they don't hire the people from Old Harbor. They don't buy groceries in Old Harbor. They don't buy fuel in Old Harbor. What they do is they come in inside our bays and take the fish, process the fish, and leave the fish guts, the oil slime, and the other residue from the processing function, and steam off. And I'm just saying that I don't think that this is, in fact, a fair return to the state or the residents of the state. And I think that the argument that we're going to scare people away, many of these people would say, well, let's trick them onto shore first and then tax them. I say, let's be up front. Let's say the cost of doing business in Alaska, if you want to utilize the infrastructure that is paid for by the taxpayers of this state, and I can envision a situation if it's 8 times more expensive to store in cold storage fish, processed fish in Japan than it is in Alaska, then I think that the people who are going to make the business deal or the decisions to store the fish in Alaska should help the taxpayers of Alaska pay for what will probably be a state effort to construct some of these cold storage plants. I know that that's one of the things that we were up against in the fisheries business, is that generally many of these foreigners know much more about the resource and have a much longer view and plan and game plan for the resource than we do ourselves. This is because we do not give enough money to our enforcement people. We do not have enough money for managing our resources. And so every point in the equation, we're outclassed because we're unwilling to spend the money to do the research, to do the enforcement that protects our resource. So I think that it's an argument to be sure, but I think it's one that could be made that we're not going to discourage people, although we are perhaps going to increase the cost of doing business a bit. I still don't think that it's sufficient enough to say, well, we just won't come in at all. Anybody who's done any longshoring ship-to-ship outside the 3-mile limit has some real problems, and they're going to be using up a lot of paint and a lot of equipment, not to speak of the dangers of human life involved. So I think that if our local communities are going to ask for the state to come down and be the Christmas tree provider for this water project or that port development project, then I think that it's fair to expect that somehow the state gets something in its coffer to help pay the bills.
Representative Moore?
No, I don't have any questions.
Steve, you know, you guys have problems, you know, with collecting taxes from certain floating processors now. How do you envision, you know, beefing up those activities and collecting from these other people?
Let me describe the problem for you. The problem isn't that we have trouble collecting the tax. The problem is that we have trouble identifying that the processing actually went on within 3 miles. I was talking with a fellow yesterday from Dutch Harbor who is engaged in that oversight of the fishery out there, and he says, you know, he's one fellow that basically oversees an area the size of half the United States, you know, and what we're being told by the processors on the high seas is that they can process, they can transship, they can take on fuel outside of Alaska's 3-mile limit, and they are doing so. We're seeing, however, more and more economic activity shoreside in Dutch Harbor, a lot more transshipment of fish, a lot more facilities development. I think what's happening and what some of the enforcement people out there are telling me is happening is a lot of this fish is being transshipped close to shore. It may not be happening in Dutch Harbor, but it's within the protection of the islands out there. And what this landing tax does is it says you're going to have to prove to us that you didn't land the fish on shore. We know who these people are. They have to be registered with the Department of Environmental Conservation, the EPA. They get permits to fish out there. They're going to have to establish with this landing tax type of concept that they did not come within Alaska's 3-mile limit to offload their product. And I think it's this concept is probably going to be easier to get a compliance with than a tax on the activity of processing. It's very difficult for us to determine when a vessel that's in movement is processing or not processing.